And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us on the line is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, bone-chilling overnight lows of around minus 30 degrees Celsius for this past weekend in Toronto. So tried to warm things up a bit for this program, kicking things off with the Surf Lords in Old Mexico. Meantime, you, sir, are 1 year older, and since we last spoke, you have a Super Bowl win under your notch. Congratulations on you and the Broncos.
Well, thank you very much. It was a great game. Some people thought it was boring, but I thought I was on the edge of my seat till the last 3 minutes, so all turned out good for my team.
Yeah, well, Mickey, I can tell you, when you're a diehard fan of a particular team, it is never boring when your team wins, is it?
No, it is not, Rob.
Okay. Now, last time out, we talked to phosphorus. That's number 15 on the periodic table today, moving over one notch next door to number 16, sulfur. For many of us, Mickey, you know, we hear the word sulfur, and right away the smell comes to mind. Rotten eggs, the smell of matches. Let's kick it off, though, with the physical and chemical properties of sulfur.
Well, it's an abundant nonmetal with multiple valence states. It occurs in nature as a combination of eight molecules, so S8, number 16 on the periodic table. Bright yellow crystals, very low melting point, 115 degrees centigrade. It occurs both as the native metal, and probably more importantly, as metal sulfides and sulfates. It's referred to as brimstone in the Bible. A lot of that has to do with its acrid smell. Essential for all life, 30 solid allotropes, 4 stable isotopes, of which 2 comprise most or 99% of the element. It's quite abundant in the universe. 10th and abundance created in stars, and it occurs in meteorites.
Okay, you mentioned 30 allotropes. I believe that's more than any other element, isn't it?
That's true.
Okay, history. You mentioned fire and brimstone. That's, you know, back to biblical times, but certainly in use in ancient Egypt, Greece, China. Tell us about some of the early uses of sulfur.
Well, I would say first, it's been known in use since antiquity, before the first written records. We use as food preservatives in winemaking, as antiseptics. It was eventually adopted by the alchemists who wanted to make gold, and so it was an important element there. Our friend Lavoisier first proved it was an element in 1777. Early supply came from volcanoes and volcanic vents in Sicily. About the late 17 to early 1800s, there was a process developed to make sulfuric acid. By 1867, it was mined mainly in salt domes in the Gulf Coast of the U.S.
You mentioned sulfuric acid. I'm seeing that elemental sulfur is used primarily, about 85% of that is used in the conversion to sulfuric acid. Is that correct?
Yeah, sulfuric acid is the most widely used industrial chemical on the planet. Very little of sulfur actually is used for in elemental form or other form, so very much dominated by sulfuric acid.
Yeah, and I've even seen, Mickey, that sulfuric acid is looked at in terms of, it is in such wide use that it's looked at as a good measurement of the health of one's economy.
Or even that, or the state of industrial development. So I don't think it's quite Dr. Copper in that regard, but certainly you can get an idea of a country's industrial development by the amount of sulfuric acid that they both produce and consume.
All right. Now, I think one of the main reasons, of course, that we're looking at it today is the fact that sulfur is used a lot in plant nutrients. We're talking about fertilizers. Tell us that side of the story, because, I mean, that is a huge use of it, isn't it?
Well, greater than 50% of the world's sulfuric acid, or sulfur, actually, is used in the consumption of making phosphate fertilizers, and we talked about phosphorus last show. Mm-hmm. So that's the most important use. It, as mentioned before, is a chemical used in many other industrial processes, including oil refining lead acid batteries for your car, processing of water, and importantly, extraction of copper from oxide ores. So you've got to have sulfuric acid to do that. Mm-hmm. Many other minor uses, vulcanization of rubber, which allows you to drive around the road on your tires, is a sulfur process used to make cellophane, rayon, bleach paper. We've already mentioned it was used early on as a food preservative, still is, in fruit. Mm-hmm. Detergent, surfactants, pardon me. Gypsum wallboard is calcium sulfate, so that's an important use, used in gunpowder. And the list kind of goes on and on. It's a very important chemical.
Yeah, one of the other minor uses, I understand, making sure that your skin looks half decent. It's used in the treatment of acne and other skin conditions.
That's true. Yeah. The organic sulfur compounds used in antibiotics, sulfa drugs, Epsom salts, milk of magnesia, laxatives. Very important for fungicides and pesticides in the elemental form called dusting sulfur. And actually, you can use that in organic food making. Once again, sulfur dioxide used in making a wine since antiquity.
Mm-hmm. Now, it is the, you mentioned this earlier, it's the 10th most common element in the universe. Here on Earth, Mickey, where are the main concentrations of sulfur? Under what conditions are the big deposits or high concentrations found?
Well, it occurs wherever there are organic sediments. So that would be the main source and of sulfur worldwide. So oil and gas, coal also occurs in metal sulfides, so pyrite, chalcopyrite, all base metal deposits. The world has essentially an infinite source of sulfur. We use something on the order of 70 million tons a year, and and current reserves are well over 5 billion tons, and resources of 600 billion tons. So it's quite abundant. It is historically, it was mined from volcanic vents around active volcanoes. That has still maintained a small portion of production. But in the late 1800s, a frash process was developed, which essentially pumps hot water down a well and dissolves or melts the sulfur and pumps it to the surface. Historically, it's been mined that way, or from processing pyrite. But those methods have pretty much gone by the wayside now. So the mining of sulfur or the processing of pyrite has been replaced by what they call non-discretionary recoveries, and that is got to do with the refining of oil and gas, the production of coke, in efforts to eliminate sulfur dioxide in the air, which is a kind of a nasty gas. We've gone to scrubbing and recovery of sulfur from various industrial processes, mainly connected to the oil and gas and coal industries.
Okay, well, speaking of the early mining methods of sulfur, I read a great quote referring to the earlier production methods. This is from Booker T. Washington, who I understand was an African-American educator in the first half of the 19th century. Mickey, he wrote, "I'm not prepared to just now say to what extent I believe in a physical hell in the next world, but a sulfur mine in Sicily is about the nearest thing to hell that I expect to see in this lifetime." So it must have been horrific conditions to work in.
Well, must have been, and you know, the aforementioned sulfur dioxide is kind of a nasty gas. It's very dangerous at high concentrations. Mm-hmm. You know, if you work in oil fields, you've always got to be aware of that bad rotten egg or odor,
right?
Which is hydrogen sulfide gas, and it is extremely toxic. And when I worked in the oil fields as a college kid or a schoolboy, they called us in Inglewood, California, which is a sour gas field with lots of sulfur in it. Mm-hmm. They always told us, if you smell rotten eggs, run.
Yeah, run for the hills and run fast.
Yes.
Okay. You mentioned that there's certainly plenty of sulfur out there. You know, there's no danger at all that we're ever going to come up short in terms of supply. What about demand? Is the demand growing for this, and how is that reflected in the price movement?
Well, demand is growing, but very slowly. Mm. So has a lot to do with the health of oil and gas business. I expect sulfur production to decline this year. Mm-hmm. Prices can vary widely. From 2011 to 2014, the price went from about $160 a ton down to $80 a ton. But that said, in 2008, the price of sulfuric acid, there was a worldwide shortage, briefly went to $800 a ton. For quite a while, it was $400 a ton. It rendered a couple of copper oxide mines uneconomic. So the price can be really quite volatile for a bulk mined or a bulk supplied commodity. We expect this year, with the price of oil, mm-hmm. that sulfur will decline in production, but there are surpluses sitting in many places around the world. In fact, I can look out on Coal Harbor here in Vancouver, and anybody that's ever driven across the Lionsgate Bridge from downtown to North Vancouver, you'll look on your right and you'll see big piles of sulfur, mm-hmm. Bright yellow, right there in Vancouver Harbor. And that comes from the Canadian oil sands production. There are many countries in the world produce 70 million tons a year. China, U.S., Russia, Canada, Germany, the Saudis, Japan, India, Kazakhstan, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And most of these countries that produce either have major oil and gas operations, sour gas operations, or they have major base metal smelters. So the outlook is not particularly positive at this mm-hmm. time, but you know, it is one of the world's major industrial mineral activities.
Okay. Doesn't sound like there's a direct investing angle to this story, is there?
No, I don't think so. You know, this is once again controlled by, at least in North America, by the world's largest agricultural companies and oil companies. And, you know, it's looked on just as a byproduct at this point that money can be made from.
Okay, well, we have Old Mexico by the Surf Lords rising up in the background, Mickey. So let's wrap it up there. We're going to reconnect in a couple of weeks. What's on the agenda?
Well, we're going to continue to work our way through the periodic table. We've just got a few more elements left, but surprisingly enough, we've never done the two major metals that are mined in the world, and the first one coming up would be aluminum, and we'll talk about aluminum next time.
Okay, great stuff. We'll reconnect in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Mickey.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.